A former NFL linebacker stands in front of a camera, unsure if anyone will press play. Emmanuel Acho, son of Nigerian immigrants who navigated predominantly white schools before tackling opponents on professional football fields, decides to address what millions were feeling but few knew how to discuss, the raw, unfiltered reality of being Black in America. Within days of posting uncomfortable conversations with a Black man, his inbox explodes. Matthew McConaughey wants to talk. Chelsea Handler has questions. Oprah Winfrey calls personally. The series goes viral, not because it offers easy answers, but because it creates space for the questions people were terrified to ask. What emerges is this book, a bridge across America's deepest divide, built by someone fluent in both Black and white cultures, someone willing to sit in the discomfort until understanding breaks through. What do you call someone of African descent living in America? The answer reveals a wound that never fully healed. Black Americans' ancestors were stripped of their tribes, languages, and identities, left to forge new ones in a hostile land. The terms evolved like geological layers. Colored gave way to Negro, popularized by Booker T. Washington and W.E. Du Bois. Then Black surged in the late 1960s, creating linguistic parity with white. Jesse Jackson proposed African American in 1988 to celebrate heritage rather than accept a slave owner's designation. Acho, literally African American with dual citizenship, prefers Black for its geographic power. It pulls everybody in, from descendants of enslaved people to recent immigrants, connecting people of African descent worldwide. No single label satisfies everyone in such a diverse group. If you're unsure which term someone prefers, ask. It might feel uncomfortable, but it's far better than making assumptions, just as teachers respect students' name preferences without questioning why. Submit identical resumes to companies, changing only the name from Greg to Jamal. Research from Harvard, Stanford, and the University of Toronto found that applicants with white-sounding names were almost twice as likely to get callbacks, even at companies advertising themselves as pro-diversity. This is implicit bias, unconscious prejudices that manifest as discriminatory actions without our awareness. These biases have deadly consequences. Black women die from pregnancy-related complications at 3 to 4 times the rate of white women. Black infants die at twice the rate of white infants. Even Acho experienced this at a Texas track meet, surprised to see a white runner in the fastest seed. His team joked, "Don't let the white kid beat you." Matthew Bowling set the meet record, challenging Acho's own assumptions. This conversation may be uncomfortable, but that's precisely why we need it. The acronym DENIAL fits perfectly. Don't even know I am lying. To reduce implicit bias, spend time with people from different backgrounds. Stop celebrating colorblindness, take implicit bias tests, and consider perspectives of those susceptible to discrimination. If you see something, say something. Imagine a 400-meter race where one group starts 200 meters ahead. That's America's racial reality. White people got a massive head start through slavery, broken promises like 40 acres and a mule, Jim Crow laws, and ongoing systemic barriers. White privilege isn't about wealth. It's about advantages built into life based on skin color. Your life may be hard, but your skin color hasn't made it harder. Peggy McIntosh called it an invisible package of unearned assets. For white people, privilege means feeling normal, seeing yourself represented everywhere, having products designed for you, finding mentors who see themselves in you. It's receiving the benefit of the doubt, not being profiled by police, being presumed innocent. In 2016, average white family net worth was $171,000, compared to $17,150 for Black families, 10 times greater. Pastor Carl Lentz argued brilliantly, even if white privilege weren't real, believing in it means ensuring everyone gets fair opportunities. But denying it while it exists means you've been stepping on others' necks your whole life. When Kim Kardashian wore white beaded braids and called them Bodaric braids instead of Fulani braids from West Africa, Black Twitter erupted. This exemplifies cultural appropriation, taking someone's creation without attribution or understanding the struggle behind it. In the 1830s, white actor Thomas "Daddy" Rice created Jim Crow by donning blackface and mocking enslaved people. This caricature became so popular, it gave its name to segregation laws, explaining why blackface remains deeply offensive regardless of intent. Cultural appropriation occurs when dominant groups take elements from disempowered cultures. It's problematic because it trivializes historic oppression, allows people to profit from marginalized cultures while remaining prejudiced toward them, and perpetuates racist stereotypes. After generations of demeaning black speech, bodies, and culture, it's deeply hurtful when those same characteristics get celebrated only when adopted by white people, like when Kim Kardashian gets credited with starting the booty boom, a physical feature for which black women were long denigrated. The goal isn't to stop celebrating black culture, but to celebrate it as black culture, not claim it as your own. Clear guidelines. Blackface is never acceptable. Avoid ethnic stereotypes, respect sacred cultural artifacts, and engage with cultures beyond aesthetics. True appreciation requires understanding, not just borrowing. The angry black man stereotype, cemented by 1915's The Birth of a Nation, shown in the White House and praised by President Wilson, remains one of America's most harmful racial myths. During slavery, black men faced lynching for merely looking at white women while being powerless to protect their wives from white masters' sexual exploitation. This dynamic enables the weaponizing of whiteness. Modern Karens descended from Miss Anne, the name enslaved people gave controlling white mistresses. Amy Cooper exemplified this when she falsely claimed a black birdwatcher threatened her life. The consequences are deadly. The 1921 Tulsa Massacre, which destroyed Black Wall Street and killed approximately 300 people, began when a white woman screamed after a black teen tripped in an elevator. This same dynamic contributed to the killings of George Floyd, Trayvon Martin, and Rayshard Brooks, people seen as threats primarily because they were black. The solution? See black men as individuals with the full range of human emotions, not stereotypes. As a middle linebacker for the Philadelphia Eagles, Acho called plays in the huddle. But nobody comes to see the huddle. They come to see execution. This book is The Huddle. Now it's time to run the plays. Racism has persisted for over 400 years, but because it's man-made, we can undo it. True allyship means committing long after the cameras stop rolling. It involves risk, losing friends, facing ostracism, job insecurity, ridicule, or family friction. Being an ally means risking white privilege for justice. Allyship starts with education. Read books by black authors, support black-owned bookstores, diversify your circles, attend protests, research candidates, discuss race with family, and call out racial profiling. Acho shares a pandemic memory. 17 friends gathered around his kitchen island, 8 white, 7 black, 1 mixed race, 1 Mexican, celebrating life together. That's what a world without racism looks like. Ending racism isn't a finish line. It's a road we travel together. The conversation has started. Now comes the harder part: showing up, speaking up, and staying in the fight when it gets uncomfortable.